Welcome to the Save or Die Podcast, a podcast about classical Dungeons & Dragons. If it's in a box, we'll talk about it.
Greetings and welcome to the Save or Die Podcast. This is the very first episode of the show, and it's a new podcast out here on the airwaves. I am your host, DM Vincent, along with my co-host, Liz, DM Liz, and DM Mike. Liz, why don't you say hi for everyone out there in listening land?
Hi, everyone.
Hello.
And there was DM Mike there in the background saying hello. And basically, this podcast will be about classical D&D, Dungeons & Dragons. Anything that's in a box, around a box, or made by a box, we will review. And we will talk about. There's various rules and various systems, but we will get to that all. And you can go to our website if you want to start looking up information and links. SaveOrDie.info. That's I-N-F-O. SaveOrDie.info. And our email address, Mike?
SaveOrDiePodcast@gmail.com.
That's awesome. And the first topic of tonight we're going to talk about, first a little bit about ourselves so we could so you get familiar with us and get familiar with where we're coming from when we talk about anything in this podcast. We'll start with myself since I'm already talking and hogging up the airwaves. My background comes, I started playing way back in year, and actually I started playing with D6 Star Wars. That was the first game I ever played, and then it branched out into the Red Book, or the Dungeons & Dragons Basic Red Book by the Tom Moldavay, and I went from there in my D&D career, expanded from there. You may be familiar with my voice hearing me from another podcast. If you can guess it, then you get a prize of nothing, but that is my career. I've been a DM since, and now we're going to hand it over to Mike. Mike, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I started gaming 1977, 78, I think it was. Basically, that Christmas of that year, my first D&D box set was the Holmes Basic set with those darn chits in it instead of dice. We actually, instead of roll a die, you had certain colored chits you put into a Yahtzee cup or something, and you pulled the chit out, and that was the die range for whatever die roll. I hope whoever came up with that idea... Well, anyway, never mind. I started with that, connected with a gaming group nearby that was playing with the Brown Books. So I played Brown Book D&D, the 0E as it's called, for about 6 or 8 months, and then went into Advanced D&D. Since then, I've went back and forth between the AD&D and the various incarnations of the Dungeons & Dragons basic sets. And okay. Still playing to this day.
Awesome. Liz?
Well, I started, I guess, around 1981. I found the Holmes box set at a hobby shop, and I'd never even heard of Dungeons & Dragons before at the time, but the artwork on the box set drew my eye, and just based on sight alone, I was determined to buy it. Read through the rules, was hooked, badgered my friends and my cousins into playing with me. Never found any established gaming groups until many, many years after that. I just mostly played with family members and things like that. But yeah, Holmes box set was what I started with. And bought a couple of the Brown Book supplements shortly afterwards. None of the actual first three books of the Brown Book set, just the supplements. I got Gods, Demigods, and Heroes, and I got Greyhawk. Those were the only little books I could find for the longest time, and I'd always wondered, you know, where the rest of them were. But... from there, went to AD&D, and still primarily play AD&D, but that's mostly because it's easier for me to find AD&D games than rather than, say, Holmes D&D games.
Yeah, people say what? Yeah.
If I had my druthers, though, I would probably play Holmes Rules over AD&D, but AD&D would be a close second. And that's pretty much me.
Wow. All right. I would prefer... I really do like Basic Edition, pretty much. I like playing it because it's so simple and easy, but... I do like playing First Edition as well. I mean, people probably crucify me for that, but hey, whatever. Anyway, you know a little bit about us. Let's hear a little bit about you. Write us in, tell us how you got started in gaming, and give us your experiences, and we'll read the letter on the air if you write in for us. That is the Save or Die Podcast at gmail.com. And let's head into our first segment called Game On. Game on. Remember you used to say that as a kid in the street playing games?
Get your game on, dude.
Yeah, dude. So, game on. Mike, why don't you tell us what this purpose of this segment's going to be?
The game on section is predominantly going to be covering the particular topic of the episode. As this is the first episode, we're going to be talking about the various things that encompass classic D&D and box sets. Because it's quite a range.
Definitely. This is kind of, you would consider the meat of the show, or the main purpose of topics of the week. This week we're going to be talking about how many rule sets are there exactly out there, and why are there so many?
I'm sure no matter how many we list, somebody's going to mention that we've forgotten one, because there's just that many.
Everybody knows where we all stand or what rules edition we like, so you already know those three, other than the Little Brown Book and the Holmes edition and the Moldavate rules. What else can we start with?
Well, there's the Mensur re-editing of the Basic and Expert sets, which Moldavate first put out the Red Book that you were discussing earlier. Mm-hmm. And the big difference between it and the Holmes Basic Book was that Holmes was designed as more of an introduction and tried to steer people, at least implicitly, to AD&D, and had a lot more to do with the Brown Books and feel, whereas Moldavay's Basic was made to be a separate game. Very similar, of course, but it was to be a basic set that would eventually have an expert set, which is the Cook Marsh Blue Book version.
Yes, I possess that one as well. I like to refer to that every once in a while when I get up that high in level if anyone wants to play that long, but...
Yeah. Personally, even back in the old days when we were playing Brown Book, I never knew anybody who had characters over 12th level.
Yeah.
Generally, that was when you retired, got your stronghold, and started conquering places.
Yeah, it became political, and I don't know. I like to run out there and adventure. Other than the Moldavian and the Cook and Marsh one, the companion set, and then...
Yeah, that was the Mensur.
The Mensur.
Frank Mensur went and re-edited the Red and Blue books, and then extended them on into the Companion set, the Master's set, and the Immortal set.
I did play in a bunch of Immortal games, which I had a lot of fun playing in.
Mm-hmm.
Immortal games were so much fun, with the DM of mine from the past named Joe. I'll get into him a little bit later on in other episodes, but he was a good DM, and he ran some good Immortal adventures for us. But I don't think I've ever actually physically used anything beyond Book 1 and Book 2, as they called it, out of the Red and Blue.
Mm-hmm.
No one ever really went that far to use those rules, so...
The Companion set had some great ideas for NPCs, some of the higher-level NPCs that the characters might run into in the course of adventuring. But, yeah, I think I can maybe count on one hand the number of PCs that actually got to that level.
I certainly never... had many characters that even made it up to 10th level, I would always go on to a new character before they got really that high up.
Yeah.
It seems,
anyway,
seems
as
that
far
way.
As
yeah.
after that set, the box sets I know of since then were the Black Challenger rules, which were put out in the early 90s, along with a couple of box sets that were just called Classic D&D, that they had a lot of maps, plastic figures, a lot of accoutrements.
Is that French?
Well, that's what I heard. And the Challenger, which is really odd because the Mincer set, all five of them seem to break the rules into a smaller DM's book and a player's book. But then the subsequent box sets after that seem to have put everything back into one rule book again. I know the Challenger black box set, which I have, had everything in one rule book, and it also took characters up to 5th level. But I wasn't a big fan of that box set myself, because I understand you're trying to write down, you don't want to get too bogged down in detailed descriptions or lots of big terminology for new people joining the game, but in my opinion, Classic, or the Black Challenger version went too far that way. Some of it was like reading, C. Jane Run, almost.
So, what's the rumor behind why there were so many rules additions? You had a... Tell me a little bit about it before the podcast went on. Let's throw it on the air here.
Okay. Now, let me clarify. This is hearsay. This is merely what I have heard. Which is basically that Brown Book D&D was attributed to Gary Gygax and Dave Arneson.
Okay.
Then, when Basic and Advanced was created, the Basic Holmes set, while edited by Dr. Holmes, was credited to Gary Gygax and Dave Arneson, because it did take a lot from the old game. AD&D, while mechanically very similar, went on various different directions than the Brown books, particularly emphasizing Greyhawk and Eldritch Wizardry. Well, and let me say again, this is hearsay.
Yeah.
But I have been given to understand from several people that Dave Arneson believed that by the emphasis moving to Advanced D&D, which was only attributed to Gary Gygax, he was being left out of Dungeons & Dragons royalties. And so there was court battles over it.
I see.
And what it ended up being is TSR said, well, no, Basic was its own game and had always really meant to go on to Expert and whatnot. And so then the Moldvay version was put out in order to remove any references to AD&D and to fix a few problems they had run across, so on and so forth. And that kind of took it in a parallel course with AD&D. And in some ways, I think, and I'll probably get crucified for it, but in a lot of ways, I think they did some things better. But then I've always been a rules-like sort of gamer, both player and DM. So I'm not big into getting bogged down with charts and things, so... Anyway, that's what we've heard. If people have additional information about it, by all means, let us know.
Oh, we'd love to.
But it does certainly make sense.
Yeah. Well, there was a time that Basic D&D and Advanced Dungeons & Dragons were out at the same time as two different lines being produced for quite a while in the 80s, so...
Oh, yeah, they were fully supported up until the early... Both were supported equally up... or relatively equally, up until the early 90s, when eventually TSR killed that line and just tried to import everything into 2nd edition AD&D.
Yeah.
It's a shame.
Yeah, it is. I remember both of them being supported, and I remember when I was first looking over things, I'm like, wait, which one? And I remember everyone's like, whoa, Advance is better because, adults play Advance, and, only babies play Basic. that's some of the things I got. So,
which is really ironic because in the 70s, the miniatures and especially the war game community at the time, most war games had basic and advanced rules to them. It's the same game, but it's like if you wanted the complexity of advanced, play advanced. If you don't, just play basic. There wasn't a stigma to, yeah, basic is for, you know,
babies.
Kids or people who, you know, aren't intellectually sophisticated enough to understand.
Well, the difference that I noticed between basic and advanced is that you can pick up basic and run an adventure a lot faster than you can run an advanced D&D adventure. It just seems a little more simpler and for the person that's on the go, ready to go play a game type deal.
Yeah. I've known people who can off-the-cuff AD&D with the best of them, and that's great.
Yeah.
But on average, yeah, I would agree with you. I think basic doesn't get quite so bogged down in the minutiae.
No.
And thus is better for seat-of-the-pants type DMing.
So, Liz, what's your opinion on all this?
Well, being more of a seat-of-the-pants type DM on those rare occasions when I do it at all, I've got to agree.
Yeah, you really should be PC, Liz, shouldn't you?
Yeah, I'm PC far more often than I am DM.
Okay.
But, yeah, it's like I'll just do stuff off the fly and... which is part of the reason why I don't DM a lot, because, you know, if I can't remember something, rather than take 5 minutes trying to look it up in the book, I'll just say, okay, this is how it's going to go, and, yeah, you know, get on with the game, because I'd rather be gaming than make everyone stop and wait while I try to figure out what I've, you know, not remembered for, you know, well, this type of combat, blah, blah, blah. But, yeah, and... one of the reasons why I still like Holmes so much to this day, you know, in the preface of the game itself, it specifically says, the game is completely open-ended, is subject to modification, expansion, and interpretation according to the desires of the group participating. And it's like, yes, that's how I feel about DMing right there.
Well, yeah, I think we're pretty much the three of us are by-the-seat DMs or on-the-fly DMs, as I like to call it. I kind of like to use the old Gary Gygax method of, roll me a D6. Tell me what you got.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's... I can understand, you know, having a base understanding of the system so that you know what makes sense as far as, well, you're rolling to hit, you know, D20 would probably be better than a D6, you know, because you get a bigger range. But,
yeah.
Other than, you know, having a base understanding of what type of situation is involved and what a reasonable mechanic would be, by all means, you know, whatever works.
Yeah, it's pretty simple. And
people get too hung up on the letter of the rules and they lose the spirit.
Yeah. All right, tell us what you think. You know our email address, and we'll say it one more time. It's saveordiepodcast@gmail.com. Write us in, let us know. We'll head into our next segment of Random Encounters. Random Encounters. So Random Encounters pretty much is going to be monsters, NPCs, or whatever you can think of, random encounters, anything that you would experience during a adventure when you're playing, and throwing it over to Liz on the spot, what monster do we have this week?
The kobold!
No.
Oh, damn. Well, never mind.
Liz really likes kobolds.
Yes, I know. That will be for a later episode, but...
All right, it's the Thule.
Oh. The Thule. We actually have, before we get into the Thule, there was some interesting background on the Thule. Mike, you were telling me before, or was it Liz, you were telling me about the Thule, how it actually accidentally got printed that way in an earlier edition.
Well, that's been the story. The Thule was listed in Brown Book B&D, but no stats were ever really given for it. So a lot of people thought, well, maybe it meant ghoul and was just a typo, Well, when the Moldvay basic came out, and it may have been in Holmes too, I don't remember. But anyway, apparently they decided, well, no, it's really a real monster. And the Thule was the, I'm not sure how this happens, but it was the combination of a troll, hobgoblin, and a ghoul.
There must have been a lot of heavy drinking going on before that happened.
Oh, yeah. But, which yeah. isn't as weird as it sounds, because the original Null, which people who play AD&D and later versions may know of as the Hyena Men, the Brown Book description of the Null was the combination between a gnome and a troll. Another thing that might have involved a lot of drinking. But,
maybe.
So, that's been the debate behind it. Gary Gygax was quoted of it being an actual monster that he had used in the past. Unfortunately, with Gary's passing, unless someone asked him and we don't know about it, there's no real reference to find out definitively. But I went looking at the Brown Book, Random Encounter Table, where the Thule is listed. And it is right above the ghoul, right almost in the center of the table. I must say that I, after looking at that table, I'm leaning to the fact that it probably was a real monster rather than a typo. Mm-hmm. And the reason behind that is every monster listed on that particular table is only listed once. Where if the Thule was supposed to be a ghoul, that would have had the ghoul listed twice on 6 and 7, I believe, as part of the table. And since none of the others were listed twice, it seems to kind of imply that it was a real monster. Hmm. But we may never know for sure.
And then they created actual statistics for it in the Moldvay and B43, as I'm looking it up real quick. Yes, it is. They actually have a little description and its statistics. But I don't know why they actually say it twice, unless they were just thinking people back then couldn't read right. But if it is damaged, a Thule will regenerate one hit point per round as long as it's alive. And then after that it says, after a Thule is hit, the DM should add one hit point to the total at the beginning of each round of combat. Why would they rephrase the same thing all over again like that? I'm not sure, but...
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty deadly little creature there with a armor class of 6 and a hit dice of 3...
I believe, wasn't it listed there that they were usually the bodyguards of hobgoblin kings?
Yes.
Yeah.
The actual description of a Thule is a magical combination, like Mike said, of ghoul, hobgoblin, and a troll. And it actually refers to the D&D expert rules for a further look at it. So if you're interested in getting a further look at this monster, maybe, I don't know if it has a picture because I don't have the book in front of me right now, but
that's the Moldvay Red Book, right?
Yes.
Right.
It refers
which
to...
Which was another interesting part about the Moldvay and Cook basics, is you'll notice, as you've mentioned, the page titles were like B32 or B41, and in the expert book, it's...
X.
Yeah, X12 or X13, because the whole idea was you were supposed to generally put them together.
Yeah, the general idea was to rip pages out. It was supposed to be put in a loose leaf binder, if I remember correctly. And
yeah, because they were already punched. You just supposed to cut the spine away and then just put them together, where putting the pages together where they made sense and have one rule book.
Which is really a good idea that just really didn't catch on.
Yeah, yeah.
Because basically what it was doing was setting up for errata, which we call it nowadays, on later edition books of different games. So instead of people sitting there cutting and pasting out of online errata and pasting it in their book, you would get this new book, you pull a page out, put it where the old page was, boom, new rules, you're all set.
Ready to go.
Spiffy book. So what ways could we use this Thule? Other than the book saying it's a bodyguard, so it's kind of limited in being...
Except it has the paralysis ability of the ghoul.
Yeah.
And it regenerates, I believe, as the troll.
It does regenerate one hit point
per
round.
Or at least, yeah, that's not as many as a troll, but that's still pretty good.
But we won't really see this monster wandering around.
I suppose you might see it if it was on a mission for the Hobgoblin King, but I suspect in such a case they wouldn't be alone. They may be with maybe a six hobgoblins or something, and he's kind of in charge of the escort.
True.
But totally by himself, yeah, that would be... Unless, of course, you're sneaking around a hobgoblin lair.
I guess that's probably where you can definitely use it. All right.
Yeah.
Liz, how do you think you would use it?
Well, if I didn't want to connect them directly with hobgoblins, I could certainly see them, you know, as mercenary types hiring themselves out for, you know, other evil NPCs or monster types.
That's true.
The
Hobgoblin King is killed, what happens to them? They're going to do something else.
They become king?
But they never say that. They just say the bodyguard of kings.
Products of your imagination.
I'd probably primarily use them as mercenary types, sell swords for individuals who don't mind getting hirelings of a questionable nature to do questionable things for them.
Maybe a thieves guild.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe
just the bodyguard for a big bad evil guy. Not necessarily hobgoblin. I mean, an anti-paladin or evil sorcerer.
An evil sorcerer?
In an evil petting zoo?
Yes, definitely. All right, cool.
Don't pet the fowls.
because you'll be...
You'll be feeding the fowls. Yeah.
Let's throw it out to our listening audience. Tell us what you do with the creature. And that's going to end the segment for today. We'll head into our final segment of the night. Products of your imagination. As I name dropped before. Did you like that one, guys? Yeah.
Mm. These Dungeons & Dragons game. Products of your imagination.
So products of your imagination is what we're going to call this segment. The point of this segment is going to be basically we're going to review, say a module, a book, a movie, maybe even music. Anything that can inspire your game or that is based on classic Dungeons & Dragons that we don't put anywhere else.
Or that at least is, when you listen or read it, makes you think of classic Dungeons & Dragons.
Mm-hmm. And what do we have this week? We have none other than the B1 module, Search of the Unknown, or is it Into the Search of the Unknown? One of the two. Search of the Unknown. So what is the big deal about this module that everyone just skips over it?
I always rather like the idea that you can write in your own encounters. It makes it rather personalized, and it's unlikely that if you've gone through B1 under one DM, if another DM runs B1, it's not going to be exactly the same thing as what you went through before.
Right. B1 is really set up for the beginner DM and beginner player, people that have never played, picking up for the first time. This helps you run through the adventure, and it's always random, and even tells you that it'll never be the same thing twice exactly to the end, as it has lots of random charts and everything that the DM can plan, or he could sit there right at the adventure through it and just roll it right there, and that's the monster you're going to be facing, or that's the situation you're facing. It has a giant map of different rooms of the, I believe it was the temple or the dungeon you were supposed to go through.
The lair of supposedly Zelagar and...
Thank you, I couldn't think of the name.
Yeah. And that fighter guy, R something, whose name escapes me at the moment.
Rogaine.
Rogaine, yes.
Actually, I think it is like Rogan or something.
Yeah, something like,
I just think of Rogaine.
It's a great module, like I said, for beginner DMs, as it really brings you through the DMing, how things are worked out. I think a lot of the later editions have copied this module, some to speak, with their own modules here and there and inside their books, but we won't get into that because it's a different podcast at a different time. So have any of you guys actually played through this module or DM'd this module?
Well, I bought it. I never actually had the opportunity to run anyone through it, but I do remember buying it and going over it and, you know, laboriously writing in pencil all of the things that would go in the different rooms, and never got to actually use it.
So you actually bought it? It wasn't in your home set?
It may have been in the home set, but it's been such a long time. It's like 1981. God, you know. but yeah, I mean, I remember having it and, you know, writing in all my stuff that I was going to do, and never did actually use it though.
I know this came with a box set. Was it the Holmes edition it came with?
Yes. Kind of equally. Some of them had B1, others had B2.
Yeah, I remember the DM that we played with, Joe, he had it. And that's where he got it from, the box set, he said. I just couldn't remember which one it came with. But, cool. Yeah, some people were able to purchase it on the side as well, but it became so unique and so few printed copies eventually that it was so hard to get for a certain time. And,
yeah,
Go ahead, Mike.
Got overshadowed by B2, I think, a lot, and a bit unfairly. Not to take away anything from Keep on the Borderlands.
But no, great module in itself, but I noticed everybody, when they were speaking about it, they were always like, B2, B2, B2. Well, what about B1? B1 was a great module. Great place to start. I guess maybe it was too expensive at one point. I know it is like around $15 on Amazon right now if you want to get it like new.
Mm-hmm.
But I know for a time it was like $80.
Not a lot of people not a lot of collectors want to purchase the used modules because they've been written in. It's very difficult, I think, to find a B1 that has never actually been written in.
True.
And yet, $15, I mean, how much are you going to pay for, you know, your average new, quote-unquote, old OSR module? You know, you're going to pay $10 to $12. It's really not that bad, but again, it gets overshadowed by B2. Now, this is coming from somebody who has never played or run it. I actually read about it. I'd known about it, but I actually read it in detail for this episode. And I think the author, Mike Carr, did a really good job of putting together what a dungeon crawl is supposed to be like. It's got some great text in the front to help the total neophyte out. And I really think it's a shame more people haven't run or played this or sing its praises. I think it's really great.
I am surprised a lot of the old school community does not praise this module and skips directly to B2, but I'm sure some people will correct us and say, well, I really said that B1 was definitely the module. You know. Well, I'm sure we'll get a bunch of those people, and I'm sure they're going to be sending us hate mail as we speak. Hello, future people.
Hi.
Hey, they're listening.
Yes, they're listening at this point, saying, I can't believe that. Anyway.
In which case, keep listening to us to catch more errors.
Definitely. We like you catching errors and correcting us.
Well, seriously. I mean, that's how you learn.
That's how you learn, definitely.
But I think one of the big differences is the advantage to B2, Keep on the Borderlands, is you've got a little bit of dungeon, a little bit of wilderness, and the keep. I mean, you've even got a teeny bit of town there.
Yeah.
You know, you've got a good variety of things to do. B1 is dungeon, but you get it in spades. I mean, I think it's got 40 keyed places. It's huge. You can spend a lot of time in there.
Hmm. All right. So, tell us what you think about B1, and hopefully you'll have a good opinion of B1 like we do. SaveOrDiePodcast@gmail.com. Well, that's going to put a wrap on the show this week. Our first show. Yay! As you can hear the sad music in the background cueing us out as we're going to be leaving you this week. What you can look forward to in our next episode, which should be out in another week or so, is we sat down and we had a nice long interview with Tim Kask. We got him on the phone and he told us his stories about when he worked at TSR, and he gave us some few tidbits about Magic Missile and certain things about it, why it was changed a certain way and how it originally was, and how he said it was his fault it got changed. But you're going to have to listen to the next episode to find that out, aren't they, guys?
Yes.
So this is going to be Vince signing off with the crew. Give us a shout out. You can probably find us mostly hanging out. I usually hang out at dragonsfoot.org, but I've been hanging out at the Sword and Wizardry, which we also support as one of the retro clones out there. What are the other retro clones we're going to be supporting, guys?
Yes, they're the retro clones for the box sets, at least the ones that I know of, for Zero D&D, basically the brown books, is Swords and Wizardry. Either the box set version or the core version, depending on how crunchy you want to get with it. Also, for the Mold Bay and Cook basic expert fans, there's Labyrinth Lord, supported by Goblinoid Games, and there should be links to both on our website.
And that is saveordie.info, INFO, if I could spell today. So now we are officially signing off, saying goodnight, the long sad goodbye music.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
And we'll... Happy trails. No. And we will see you next week. Same bad time, same bad channel. Good night, everybody.
Da 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 da. Bye.
Welcome to the Save or Die Podcast, a podcast about classical Dungeons & Dragons. Welcome to the Save or Die Podcast, a podcast about classical Dungeons & Dragons. If it's in a box, we'll talk about it. I could do a Smurf voice.
Go ahead, you're free reign.
Not unless it might get... Don't do it unless you're willing for it to be put on the show.
Welcome to the Save or Die Podcast, a Smurfy podcast about Smurfy classical Dungeons & Dragons. Huh. Brought to you by Papa Smurf and DM Vince.
Papa Smurf and DM... I guess you're Papa Smurf then, Mike.
And you can put the Smurf theme behind that.
Boy.
Nah, I'm tapped out.